I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, first, we've done more digging into the elusive Paco, and it's what we haven't found that is even more important than what we have found. Plus, Washington State has the third highest gas prices in the nation. We're going to give you a breakdown of why they're so high and where all that damn money the government takes in taxes is going. And we're joined by two leading experts on homelessness to react to President Donald Trump's executive order dismantling Housing First. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support this little show of ours for just $5 a month by signing up at Undivided Pod. That's UndividedPod.com. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. Paco, Paco, wherefore art thou, Paco? I want to do a follow-up on Paco today. And you might be wondering, Brandi, why are you so obsessed with figuring out whether this one person was actually arrested by ICE? And it's because these are the narratives that are driving hate, division, and even violence in our country against ICE agents. We've seen ICE agents. There was just a case down in Portland with an ICE agent who had a rock hurled at his head and his head was split open, could have died. And all these narratives about these ICE agents going out, cloaked, kidnapping people, abducting people in vans, ripping away hardworking, law-abiding immigrants who are just trying to build a better life. And then you find out so many of them aren't true. You know, there might be some slivers of truth that are woven throughout them, but, you know, once you start to dig into the facts, the narratives just crumble. And by that time, it's too late. By that time, you have passive news consumers who've already consumed it, already believed it. It's already driven their hate and fear and anger. And so these things matter. If you didn't watch our show yesterday, we talked about a story out of the Olympian newspaper in Washington State. The headline, Lacey business owner abducted by ICE, according to online fundraiser, is written by a quote-unquote journalist named Rolf Boone. And it just had a picture of it looked like a sketch of a guy who allegedly is named Paco on his horse. And then it had a narrative in there that he was abducted, as they say in the headline, by ICE, taken to the Northwest detention facility, was a business owner, a mechanic, ran a small organic farm, was a tax-paying citizen. The entire story was built completely around the narrative of a woman named Carissa Miller. So Carissa Miller is an anti-ICE activist who runs her own farm down in the Olympia area. And she, a couple weeks ago, posted a GoFundMe saying, husband, friend, and local business owner abducted by ICE. It had that sketch of, Paco, who she, as she calls him. And she had spun this whole narrative, which, again, one of the reasons we were so interested in this entire story is it wasn't just one anti-ICE activist out on social media making a claim about someone she calls Paco, who she says is her neighbor and a dear friend, being scooped up by ICE. No, she was raising money off of it to the tune of about $12,000 so far. And then her entire narrative was picked up as truth by a newspaper that didn't bother to verify independently one single solitary detail of her entire story and just printed it as if it was the truth. And she had posted these videos on her Instagram account making some pretty crazy claims about what happened to poor Paco.
My close friend and neighbor was abducted by ICE. They pulled him over, didn't ask any questions, pulled the phone out of her hand when she tried to record. My guess is because he is a business owner in town, and that is what put him in jeopardy. So I just got off the phone with my friend who's in the Northwest Detention Center. So he said when he arrived, there was 50 people, and now there's 2,000 people. He told me that he didn't have a plate. He needed a plate. And he didn't have enough socks or underwear. He said that he had a court date originally scheduled, but they canceled it. Most of the people there are getting picked up like he did on the street without a warrant.
So we immediately, I mean, my spidey senses are just tingling all over the place about this story. And let me be very clear, because there's some follow-up I have to what we reported on the show yesterday. I think this would be a totally weird thing for this Carissa Miller woman to just make up out of nowhere. Now, crazier things have happened, but I am not saying definitively that this Paco person does not exist. What I'm saying is that a newspaper picked up the story without any verification whatsoever. And we've reached out to the newspaper for an explanation as to why they would do such a thing. And we have not heard anything back yet. And I'm also saying that some of the outlandish claims that she's making there, I think are probably untrue. I think there is a high likelihood that whoever this Paco is had a very good reason to have been picked up by ICE. When we did this story yesterday, we had set out over the course of about 24 hours to try to figure out anything we could about this Paco individual. I spoke to ICE Seattle. They said there really wasn't any arrest they could think of that matched the description of what this woman was saying had happened. And they said, we don't even have enough information to go off of. You're using the name Paco. There's a sketch of him. We don't even know what that is. We had reached out. Nicole has now reached out multiple times to Carissa Miller, both through the GoFundMe page and through her business website. We have gotten no response at this point in time. And we basically said to her, and we've laid it out, like, basically, I don't believe you. And we're worried that you're defrauding people based on a false or incomplete story to the tune of like $12,000. And I told her essentially, right, that we would go to GoFundMe. And we've also reached out to GoFundMe's media relations team to see what their what they do in situations like this when the validity of a fundraiser is called into question. So when we ended the show yesterday, Paco was nowhere to be found. I mean, we couldn't find, she says he's a mechanic. We couldn't find any mechanics by that name in the general area. We couldn't find any organic farms run by someone named Paco. ICE had no idea what she was talking about. She hadn't responded to us. So we have found at least one thing. And then there's a lot of other digging we did that has resulted in nothing. And I want to take you through that because, again, this is the work that journalists should be doing. And I've said I'm a political commentator. I'm not even a journalist. Why am I doing the work that journalists should be doing? The Olympian should have done this work before they even bothered to publish the story. But this is the problem, right? They're so eager to believe these narratives, they'll just push it out. And some of this research was very basic. Some of it's been very basic. Now, some of it we're sleuthing a little more hard. But here's one thing that did come up yesterday. Remember that sketch that one of our viewers had plugged into an AI detector and found that the sketch of Paco and his horse was like 97% likely to have been created with AI. But I said yesterday, you know, maybe this is a sketch they made with AI based off a real picture of Paco. So there is a real picture associated with that sketch. Apparently, when the GoFundMe page was first launched a couple weeks ago, there was indeed a picture that clearly that sketch is based off of a man, cowboy hat, with a horse. The question is, why was it removed? And for those of you saying, hey, there's a little logo on his vest there. Can you look into that? We tried, we zoomed in as much as we could, couldn't make out a single word that was on it. So you might be saying, oh, well, there's a picture. So clearly this is a guy, right? I did a reverse image search of this image. Couldn't find anything on the internet. But we still don't know. Is this just a Mexican guy on a horse that they found somewhere online in some corner of the world and used it for this fundraiser? For all we know, the answer is yes. But why would they have at a fundraiser, when this guy's already in ICE detention, why would they have this real picture and then change it to be this AI-generated sketch of that picture? That's very weird, right? So I'm happy that we found a picture, but we don't even know if it's associated with a real person in terms of Paco, you know, somebody who was arrested by ICE, or whether it was plucked from somewhere on the internet. You know, we've asked this woman, but we don't really know. So we can't make out the label on the jacket. At least we know there's a picture that goes with the sketch. So that's certainly something. So here's the work that we did overnight. So this woman, this Carissa Miller woman, she is a real person, obviously, with a pretty busy social media profile, as you've seen from the videos. She's also the owner of something called Withy Windle Valley Farm, which is also a real thing. And if we pull it up on a map, We can see exactly where it's located. And if you recall in the video, she's talking about, oh, you know, we're at the end of a gravel road and he's my neighbor. She refers to him as her neighbor. Okay, so we searched all the property records in that entire area. We went within 5 miles of Withywindle Valley Farm. I can tell you first, there is absolutely no one who owns property in that 5 mile radius by the name of Paco. Now, maybe Paco is a nickname. Maybe she's trying to protect Paco and Paco's family from future actions by ICE. Entirely plausible, right? We widened the search a little bit. We did find in the area a few pieces of land and property owned by people with Hispanic names. Because you remember, she said, like, his wife doesn't even speak English. So what we did is we took those Hispanic names that we could find of Hispanic-sounding property owners in, like, the five-mile radius, and we cross-referenced them with business records to see if any of them owned a mechanic shop or any of them owned some sort of organic farm. No luck. I looked through publicly available databases for all those Hispanic-sounding names, and I found some Facebook profiles associated with those names. None of them look like the guy in the picture. Some of them are very young. Some of them are very old. The guy in the picture looks to be like 40s to 50s. So we went through everything. We went through everything. And Paco is a ghost. I even reached out to farmers in that area of the state to say, here's this picture of this guy that this woman is saying is named Paco and has an organic farm down there. Does he look familiar to you? And I got nothing. Now, again, all of that to say, he absolutely might still exist. He could be a dude who was detained by ICE and is sitting right now in the Northwest Detention Facility. But I have gone through everything I know to go through to try to confirm the validity of this story, and I have virtually nothing. After 48 hours... So that, again, reinforces the Olympian never should have touched this story. They never should have pushed this story out without a last name of the guy, proof that he's real, information from ICE on why he was detained. But let's just go with, again, I think one of the reasons I think it would be weird for this woman to make this up is, again, she has a social media profile that she's very active on. She's a total activist, does other activist type things in the community. She has a real business called Withywindle Valley Farm that is in a real place in the Nisqually Valley. Wouldn't it be weird as a farmer in that area to go public and say our neighbor and friend was arrested by ICE if there weren't some sliver of reality in there? Because then your other neighbors would be like, hey, Carissa, I saw that video. Who are you talking about? We don't know anyone named Paco around here. Who are you talking about? So that's why, as much of a skeptic as I am, and as much as I don't believe the story that she's spinning, there's got to be some sliver of someone was arrested by ICE, right? So that's sort of where I am. Are you giving him a nickname to protect his identity? Are you changing other aspects of who he is to protect his identity? And why won't you respond to us? If this is a real guy, we've told you, in so many words, correct, Nicole, that we're planning to report your GoFundMe.
Oh, yes. I said by 11:30 today.
By 11:30 today to PM?
No, PM? No. By showtime today.
Oh, and we did email GoFundMe. Yes. Although we didn't say, we basically said to GoFundMe's press team, we have tried for 2 days to verify any single detail of the story this woman is telling and have been unsuccessful. So what is the protocol from here? Because you've got people willfully giving up their money and, you know, shame on them maybe for not doing a little more digging, but they're kind-hearted and they're being spun a tale of this really nice man on a horse who's in dire straits and is going to have to sell his businesses and he's going to be deported from the country. So if this woman really has some information, and we're happy to keep it private, if you want to give us his real name, if it's not Paco, so we can take it to ICE and verify what happened here, and we won't release his real name, if we can make a deal like that, totally fine. The other issue here is, I find it very unlikely that if there was a person really picked up by ICE in the manner that she suggests, that he has no criminal record whatsoever, that he's done absolutely nothing wrong. I mean, she's suggesting he's got all his paperwork in order and he's a taxpaying citizen and all these things. So he might be out there and there might have been something that happened, but the tale she's spinning to get thousands of dollars on GoFundMe, I think there's a 0% chance of it being true. All of that being said, again, I'm still more upset with the media than I am with this farmer woman. She's an activist. She's all F immigration on social media. This is what left-wing activists do. They make up stuff. They exaggerate stuff to sow division and hate and orange man bad. That's what they do. And man, if I did a story every time an activist did that, that's all I'd ever do stories on. But at this time when there's literal violence in our state, in Oregon, in California, elsewhere across the country, when ICE agents are being doxxed and harassed and assaulted and shot, for the media to pick up, the Olympian, to pick this up and put it out there as truth with literally no verification is shameful. It is a shameful indictment of the state of the mainstream media and legacy news. And I know this isn't the only instance. There's been many other instances across the country where the media is so quick to believe these narratives that they throw every semblance of journalistic integrity right out the window to push the narrative. Now, in defense of the reporter, not that I'm really defending the reporter, Rolf Boone, I did email him, as I said, and two of the editors at the Olympian, and I got a response, an automated response from Rolf Boone saying he's out of the office until August 3rd. But I still haven't heard back from the editors at the Olympian. We'll try again today. So all we're looking for, Carissa Miller, if this is a real GoFundMe, a real person, one little bit of information that can help us verify the story. One little bit of information. Otherwise, after we hear back from GoFundMe, we're going to take steps to report it as fraud. Because people are at the very least not being told the whole story. But we want to be able to confirm with ICE if this is a real person, why they were arrested. And it's important for people to know that as the media continues to put out these sob stories, there is always more to them. There is always more to them. We have seen it in every single instance. So be very, very skeptical of anything you read about immigration efforts, deportation efforts happening right now in the United States of America, because very little of that reporting is giving you the full picture. All right, I want to talk about gas prices. Paco, if you're out there, though, without a plate and not enough underwear and socks at the Northwest Detention Center, as she says, I'm sorry.
Plate. So interesting.
That's why. There's these random details where I'm like, yeah. There's some things that are too random to be made up out of thin air.
A plate. Like they just hand you food on a napkin?
No, you just got to hold your hands out, apparently. I don't know. Next thing we know, she'll do a video on Instagram saying Paco's at Alligator Alcatraz.
And you know, it's summer. You don't really need socks.
You don't need socks in the summer. I hardly ever wear underwear, to be honest.
Right.
It's true. This is how we get the clicks, you guys. This is how we get the clicks. A lot of intelligent coverage and then random comments like that. And me telling Nicole to take her shirt off for clicks. Gas prices are high. You guys have probably seen that. You know, every time I pass by a marquee at a gas station, I immediately think of Jay Inslee. Like, thanks, Jay Inslee. Glad to see your legacy is still intact. Because, of course, our high gas prices are driven by a couple things. We have very, very high gas taxes here that just went up a couple weeks ago, 6 cents per gallon. And then, of course, the climate commitment grift that was passed by Jay Inslee on his way out the door. A final FU to the voters of Washington State who were dumb enough to keep him in office for 12 years. So maybe they deserve it. Right now, Washington State has the third highest gas prices in the nation, just behind California and Hawaii, but we are now more than a full dollar ahead of the national average. More than a full dollar ahead of the national average, and we're only going to see them continue to go up. And in fact, given how close we are to California and Hawaii, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a repeat of last summer when, for the first time in history, we had the highest gas prices in the nation for a short period of time. So you guys know by now, I mean, you're used to having some of the highest gas prices in the nation, only getting worse because of the increased gas tax, and then, of course, because of the Climate Commitment Act, which voters were duped into not repealing last year. And the Climate Commitment Act was designed to increase gas prices. Governor Inslee lied about it. He said it wouldn't increase gas prices, despite the fact his own staff in 2014 gave a presentation to the legislature explaining that they would that it would increase gas prices. But he has no integrity. And so he lied to people, and a lot of people just bought it. But the idea behind the Climate Commitment Act is that you have these carbon credits that go up for auction that polluters need to buy, basically, to be able to continue to pollute. And the longer the CCA is in effect, the fewer carbon credits there are available for auction. So the price of them skyrockets. And then what happens? They pass that along to you at the gas pump. And that's why you're paying so much money at the pump. Our friend Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center did another one of his great articles where he goes in depth on all of these things. And I think one of the most infuriating aspects of what we're about to go through with you is that, look, if the CCA was making a substantial impact on the climate, if it was substantially reducing carbon emissions, and this was revolutionary, then maybe some people could find it in their hearts to justify it. You know, if they came out and said, hey, gas prices are going to go up, but like, we're going to save the planet and we're going to show you the results and here are the results and it's just exceptional, then maybe you could justify it. And I think a lot of Washington voters would be fine with it, frankly, who prioritize environmental issues, you know, tend to be a little bit wealthier, so maybe tolerate paying a little bit more money for gas, or drive a Tesla and don't pay any money for gas, whatever it is. But the reality is the bulk of the money brought in so far via the climate commitment grift is just going to grow the size of government, is doing absolutely nothing to help the planet, reduce carbon emissions, improve the environment. So Todd goes into all of this in great detail for the Washington Policy Center. So first, it's important to know that the CCA has brought in nearly $4 billion for the state of Washington through these auctions, which again are offset. They just pass the cost along to you at the gas pump. So that's since the beginning of 2023. The $4 billion goes to fund a range of, you know, environmental initiatives, from public transit, electric ferries, CO2 reduction projects, climate mitigation, environmental restoration, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. However, a big bulk of it, when you look at the numbers, just goes to bloated government. It says a close look at how the tax revenue is being spent in the new 2025-2027 operating budget shows that, contrary to rhetoric, much of the money ends up in state agencies to hire more government employees, pay for studies, and fund planning bureaucracy. In fact, more than 70%, Todd writes, of CO2 tax revenue in the operating budget is going to expand government or fund planning bureaucracy rather than projects that yield tangible environmental benefits. For example, the second largest expenditure from the CCA money in the 2025-2027 operating budget is $22.5 million that goes to fund local governments planning for climate change. What the hell does that even mean? And why are you planning for climate change? I thought we're going to save the planet from climate change through the CCA, so you shouldn't have to plan for it, right? In total, he says, there's about $25 million dedicated to government oversight of, quote, environmental justice and support for disadvantaged groups. Virtually all of that funding is for government staff, planning, and studies, with little going to projects that improve living circumstances. So $25 million for environmental justice, so you can hire government employees so they can basically talk about environmental justice. And that's why you have to pay so much money at the gas pump. It's not to improve the environment. It's not to bring down carbon pollution. It's so the state of Washington can feel good about itself, hire a bunch of workers to get in a room, sit around and talk about environmental justice and how we should help, you know, disadvantaged communities who might live in busy areas along busy roadways and in big industrial areas where they're more likely to be exposed to pollution. We should help them. Probably not going to, but we should. Let's talk about how they're disadvantaged, but not actually help them out. It's crazy stuff. He says there's also $300,000 to, quote, address the disproportionate rates of asthma among children who reside within 10 miles of the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. He says that might be worthwhile, but it is just 0.17% of the total spending. It is one of the very few expenditures that actually directly targets environmental health and well-being. And you'll also remember, really quick note on that, what were all the commercials about during the election when the state was trying to keep the CCA and there was the initiative to repeal it? They went with these sad commercials. Little children with asthma, they can't breathe. And if you repeal the Climate Commitment Act, these children with asthma will die. And then they're spending, you find out, 0.17% to try to help kids with asthma, but specifically only kids who live within 10 miles of Seattle Tacoma International Airport. But that was one of their key talking points to try to get you to keep the CCA. Good God. It says there's also about $1.3 million to install EV charging stations and $3 million for urban forestry. There is $4 million for a workplace health and safety program for workers who are affected by climate impacts. About 18% of CCA tax revenue goes to government services, including funding to reduce the impact of the CO2 taxes on energy bills by providing utility bill assistance. Let that sink in for a second. So the CCA increases energy prices. Increases gas prices, energy prices, as a result, food prices as well, right? So then they take 18% of the $4 billion and they use that to offset the increased costs that they caused with the CCA. So isn't that just a push? But they only give those, you don't give them to everybody. So if you're a middle class person and your energy rates go up, you're not going to get any money back. You're going to have to pay these higher rates. Then they're going to take that money and they're going to give it to other people who they deem like disadvantaged enough, right? So they create this big government bureaucracy to take money from you in the form of like higher energy prices. And then they're like, oh, and we'll spend part of it helping offset higher energy prices for some people. Maybe you shouldn't have pushed up energy prices in the first place. It's absolutely, absolutely insane. So Todd, which I think is great, he's offering some solutions here. What do we do about this? Because is the CCA really going to go away? There was, I think, our best chance to repeal the CCA was in November with the initiative to repeal the Climate Commitment Act. $43 million, I think, was spent to defeat that initiative, which how do you even, I mean, they put so many lies on TV. How do you even start to push back against that? So I think Todd's of the mindset, and I've talked to him about this before, that, you know, if the CCA is here to stay, how do we improve it? How do we stop some of the wasteful spending or actually make it a little more functional? So he said, one, Governor Ferguson should delay some of the funding for projects that are unlikely to yield climate and environmental benefits, like the $22.5 million for local climate planning, $10 million for grant writers, $4 million to provide guidance and input, $1 million for an environmental justice toolkit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So he said that should be the baseline. It's like, hey, this is supposed to help the environment. Let's delay or get rid of some of the funding that's not actually going to help anything except grow the size of government. He said the legislature should cancel funding to study or plan for climate impacts and either transfer that money to real world projects or cut the funding altogether. He says, three, funding should be tied to objective metrics of environmental outcomes. None of the current expenditures, even those that are worthwhile, like forest fuel reduction, have results driven metrics. And this is very, very common for government. We see this a lot in the homeless industrial complex, which we're going to talk about today, is they put millions of dollars towards something. And then the people who were given that money to spend don't have to prove that it actually had the desired result, which is just crazy. And then he says, four, spending designed to reduce CO2 emissions should be cost competitive with the private market. Currently, even the best expenditures are extremely expensive compared to available alternatives. Projects that are not should be eliminated and directed to private sector alternatives. So if the government's trying to do something and it can't do it for the same price that the private sector is doing it, like we really should rethink whether the government needs to be in the business of trying to make a difference in that way or redirect the money to something else. So that's common sense. Of course, Governor Ferguson doesn't have any common sense. And when it comes to the climate grift, Democrats, they don't care about solutions. They don't care if it's actually having a positive impact on the environment. This is all about money, 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 money. $4 billion since just 2023. Although we still have a budget deficit. So this is a new tax, brought $4 billion extra into our coffers. You put that on top of the
the tax against rich people, capital gains tax, and so many of the other taxes that went to effect, we should be overrunneth with money. We should have more money than we know what to do with. But no, they get all this money and then they piss it away on dumb stuff that doesn't mean anything, just to grow the size of government. And then we end up still with a $14 billion budget deficit. It's truly insane. It's the definition of insanity. So while you're standing at the gas pump, gassing up with the third highest gas prices in the nation this weekend, just shout out, thank you, Jay Inslee. Thank you, Climate Commitment Act. Thank you, Bob Ferguson. Really appreciate it. All right. I wanted to follow up on this because we haven't talked about this particular law in Washington state for a long time. When it was first being considered, it got national attention. I was very opposed to it, as you'll recall. We're talking about Senate Bill 5599. This was the insane bill that basically said that if you're a child is, you know, transgender or something, and they want to run away from home because they don't think you properly accept them, they can run away to a shelter and the state will hide them there. The state will not tell you where your child is if they show up at a shelter and say it's because they're transgender and they're fleeing a home that doesn't respect their gender identity. And one of the crazy things about this at the time was there was no burden to prove that, like, a parent had been abusive. Because law already said, like, if you're abusing your child and they run away from a shelter, the state's not going to bring them back to your house. Like, they're going to call the cops and they're going to protect your child. And no, everybody's okay with that, right? But this, there didn't even have to be any abuse or anything like that. It was like, hey, I think I'm a boy and my parents say I'm not, so I'm going to run away to a shelter and the state's going to hide me there, which is government-sanctioned kidnapping. So Democrats passed Senate Bill 5599. You'll remember that Democrats in Olympia totally gaslit the public about what this is about. Is like, look, this is just about, you know, we're going to reunite families, but first we need to save these trans kids' lives.
What this does is provides a shelter for runaways and homeless youth, right? We're not talking about the other things that you're referring to as well.
This bill is about providing housing security for our trans youth.
This bill is about our LGBTQ youth that are sleeping on the streets.
Am I going to let them stay out on the street?
Just homeless, get them off the street.
At risk. At risk.
Again, that is what this bill is intended to do, to ensure that these youth have access to safe housing.
The goal of this bill is to get kids off the street and somewhere safe.
This bill is about shelter.
This bill is about getting kids housed. That's what this bill is about.
Crazy. As if there was nothing more nefarious. It's like, it's the lie that's told, for instance, when you push back against gender surgeries for children. Oh, but if you don't give them this gender surgery, they'll kill themselves. And there's no data whatsoever to back that up. There was one study people would refer to. It's been thoroughly debunked. They were using selective data to say it. So this was basically, we need to kidnap your kids because if we don't, they're going to be living on the streets. And you don't want them living on the streets, right? So we'll bring them into a shelter and, like, we'll try to reconnect you guys. No, they want your, gender-confused youth to be under the care of the state of Washington so they can continue to push them toward, yeah, gender surgeries and stuff. It was just wild. And the media at the time really push this narrative. You guys remember? I mean, we were pushing back against this. We were circulating a referendum to try to repeal it. And it was like, we got protested. We were doing signature collections across the state. I got protested as anti-trans. People were losing their minds. If you pushed back against 5599, you were a horrible bigot, transphobe, end of story. And the media, they just push that narrative hook, line, and sinker. I mean, they were saying things like, minors seeking gender-affirming care in Washington will be protected from the intervention of estranged parents. Which is like, wait, wait, wait. The parents aren't estranged. The kid just ran away from home. That doesn't make the parents estranged. And you're saying parents shouldn't be able to intervene if a child wants to go get their boobs cut off? So the media didn't do us any favors here. They're like, oh no, this is about protecting trans kids from evil parents. I mean, I remember those headlines so well. protecting minors from estrangement. I was like, are you kidding me? Just wild. So there was a lawsuit, and this brings us back to the news today. So there had been a lawsuit against this law that parents had been pursuing, and it has now been dismissed on appeal, which is really disappointing, but I can't say it is a surprise. This from the Washington State Standard. A lawsuit targeting WAW law meant to protect trans youth in crisis is dismissed on appeal. And here you see it again. The media, this law was meant to protect trans youth in crisis. No, like kids are brainwashed at school with some union-obsessed teacher into thinking they're a boy or a girl when they're not. And then they're convinced to run away from home. They're not in crisis. They need their parents. It says parents sued, arguing the law infringed on their rights. Washington's attorney general said it was, quote, an attempt to create a case where none existed. I'll read a little bit from the Washington State Standard article for you. A three-judge appeals court panel on Friday unanimously dismissed a constitutional challenge to the controversial 2023 statute, which allows operators of emergency shelters to notify state authorities rather than parents when children seek refuge as they pursue gender-affirming care and support services. The Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco upheld a lower court ruling that concluded those challenging the law lacked legal standing to sue because they could not prove they suffered actual or imminent harm from the statute. The plaintiffs who brought the case included several parents whose teenage children exhibited signs of gender dysphoria but were not runaways, and two nonprofits that oppose gender-affirming care for children. In a statement, Washington Attorney General Nick Brown's office said, "We're pleased that the court saw through this politicized attempt to create a case where none existed." So the argument that they're making and that the Court of Appeals found is that because the children of these parents who sued had not actually run away and been hidden by the state, they don't have a case. So those parents who have gender-confused children, they have to wait until the state kidnaps their kids. They have to wait until the state squirrels their children away so they can get radical gender surgeries that will change the course of their entire lives. And only after that happens, then those parents have the right to sue. Not preemptively, to protect their kids. But then by the time they have standing to sue, it'll be too late. Because their child will have been in the care of the state of Washington and been allowed, without the consent of their parents, to pursue any and all gender care that they want. Wild. It's just not right. It's sick and it's wild, and something has to change. All right, coming up next, we've got a great interview. Our friend Jonathan Cho and Robert Marbud, both of them have done so much nationally to, I think, shed light on the failure of Housing First. They're going to join us to talk about President Trump's executive order attacking both harm reduction and Housing First. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. A lot of firsts today. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. It's just a great company, an honest company, and they're going to make sure that you have the best insurance at the best price and that it is there to protect you in the event that the unthinkable happens. I mean, you can go to one of these, you know, cheap services. It'll save you 15 whatever and 15 whatevers. But the question is, at the end of the day, you might have saved some money. But, you know, if there is something that happens, are you properly protected? And you've worked so hard for everything you have. So you need to make sure that you have quality insurance. You have it at the best price. And that also you're not, frankly, paying for insurance that you don't even need. And that was the case for Mike and I when we finally took the First Mark challenges. They looked over our current insurance. And there were a few policies that we got rid of because they were redundant and completely unnecessary. So we hear from Undivided viewers and listeners all the time that after they took the First Mark challenge, they saved thousands of dollars a year on their insurance. So it really is a no-brainer, especially as we talked about. High gas prices? Well, why don't you offset that by saving a little bit of money on your insurance? FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they're always going to have your best interest in mind. All right. As you know, President Donald Trump this week signed an executive order that seeks to dismantle the failed policy of Housing First and harm reduction. Much of that has been playing out on the West Coast, including in states like Washington, where we have seen more money than ever before spent on the homeless crisis, only for it to get worse and worse. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to do just that. So the executive order from the president does a couple things. It doesn't do everything. You know, what they can control is federal funding. And we know that, for instance, in Portland, they're spending $700 million a year on homelessness. Some of that's from the federal government, but a lot of it in states like Washington, Oregon, California is because they've passed insane taxes on the citizens that go to fund the homeless industrial complex, only for the homeless crisis and the drug crisis and the mental health crisis to get worse and worse and worse. But the federal government does have some leverage over, you know, a substantial amount of money that they can take away from these jurisdictions if they continue to push the failed housing first policy, which means it's the idea that, oh, let's take this drug addict and put them into a house and then they'll get better. Like, no, they need treatment first. Okay. Or simultaneous. We're fine with simultaneous. Put them in, you know, an affordable apartment while they undergo strict treatment, a strict treatment regimen. And then, of course, the Trump administration is saying no money for harm reduction. So, you know, these little kits that taxpayer money is paid for, where they give you clean needles and boofing kits and aluminum foil and all of that so you can get high. No, the Trump administration is saying it's not going to do that. Also, one of the aspects of this order is it directs the attorney general to reverse judicial precedents and end consent decrees that limit state and local government's ability to commit individuals on the streets who are a risk to themselves or others. So they really want to lean into this idea of involuntary commitment and saying, hey, this is a serious public health issue, public safety issue. These people are a danger to themselves or others. And we need to get them into treatment centers, assisted outpatient treatment, or other facilities. And they have to stay there. They can't just wander on the streets. So one of the key entities in making this happen, I truly believe, you know, behind the scenes and also in raising awareness and showing in video that was indisputable the failures of Housing First is Discovery Institute. Our friend Jonathan Cho, I think, deserves so much credit. He's been a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. We've used his videos so often on the show where he's showing the horror of what Housing First policies have done in the state of Washington and elsewhere. And then Robert Marbut is also a senior fellow at Discovery Institute. We've had him on the show before. He has been working in the homelessness space for decades at the federal level, at local levels. And the two of them, I think their work together combined with Discovery Institute has really, I think, made this a priority for the Trump administration. So both Jonathan and Robert were nice enough to join us on the show today to discuss. Robert and Jonathan, welcome both of you back to Undivided. So this is significant. I mean, you've read the EO, obviously. Robert, we'll start with you. How much of an impact could it have on the homeless crisis we're seeing in places like Seattle?
First, I have to applaud President Trump for making this bold move, because we're now turning the tanker ship. And we've been needing to do this for 20 years, really in particular since 2013. And he just said, this is the right thing to do. We got to do it. And so this is the beginning of end of crazy gimmicks and wokey left things. And so we're on our path now to get it done. Now, we got a lot more work to do. There's a lot more that comes in behind this to make it really substantive. But it's the first big mega step, and it really will start to make the changes needed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, part of it, the leverage on a lot of these EOs that Trump has been putting down is financial, right? And I was looking at the numbers for the 2026 proposed budget, Jonathan, for the King County Regional Homelessness Authority, and about $25 million of $200 million comes from HUD. Is that enough to change behavior if HUD were to take away that $25 million?
Well, as we like to affectionately call a lot of these nonprofits that have been pushing Housing First and harm reduction, the homeless industrial complex, they're absolutely shook. Because at the end of the day, federal funding makes up a significant portion of the dollars needed to do outreach and services. So, you know, I believe either they correct course and they really start focusing more on treatment and recovery, or else, we're going to, start seeing taxes going up in Seattle and King County to offset this massive federal loss. But again, I think right now, a lot of the folks in the nonprofit space who have been Housing First harm reduction, they're still waiting for more details right now. That's what I'm hearing. They're absolutely concerned. This is definitely a seismic shift in the landscape, but they're waiting for more details as well.
And I was going to say, there are a lot of blue city mayors, what I'd call practical solution-oriented mayors up and down the West Coast, up down Highway 5, 101, who privately would tell you this crazy thing called Housing First is not working. There are clinical people who say the idea of giving drugs to drug addicts and people on substance use disorder doesn't make any sense, especially now with fentanyl. So there's a lot of common sense Democrats that know that was wrong, but they did it because they partly it was carrying the flag. The other part was they were chasing the money. And now that you make this adjustment at the national level, you're going to have a break on the left. And the common sense people on the left who realize, think about it. We had a policy that supposedly was going to end homelessness in 10 years. Instead, homelessness is now doubling every 4, 5, or 6 years, depending on where you are in the country. And we're spending 3 times more. So it hasn't worked. And so some people are going to do it because it's the right thing. Some will do it because they chase the flag. Some will do it because they chase the money. Then there's going to be the very radical, extreme, wokey people on the left who are just holding on to this nutty ideology and double down on stupid. And they're going to keep doing it their way.
Yeah, one of my concerns immediately, because we've seen it with other, you know, the one big beautiful bill, and now all of a sudden Trump's to blame for the budget crisis that states like ours were already in. And so, Jonathan, you know politics in our state pretty well and have been in other states. Does this just give them a convenient scapegoat to say, oh, in a year when homelessness is bad and they're running for their jobs again, they can say, well, it's bad because Donald Trump took all this money away from us?
Yeah, and it's heading in that direction, and we're already starting to hear language like that from some of our elected officials. You know, first of all, the King County Coalition on Homelessness putting out fear-mongering emails saying that homelessness is going to get worse, you know, after this. But they don't really have a leg to stand on if they're going to push that argument because, again, Robert said, you know, homelessness is at record highs in King County, drug overdose deaths, record highs. So the current plan is clearly not working. Now, I'd be all for the current plan if it was, if people's lives were being saved, the people are going into treatment and recovery, but it's not happening at that same pace. And what the homeless industrial complex, as well as the politicians are saying right now are, hey, look, we've always been for recovery, you know? So this is going to be great. Actually, we're already doing that. But here's the key. The key is accountability. What we haven't had in the past is accountability. What we haven't had with Housing First and harm reduction are requirements. Once you get an apartment, once you get the meth pipes or the, you know, foil to, you know, have, you know, clean drugs, so to speak, no one was ever required really to go into treatment. And that's the pushback. That's going to be the key right now. Will the left, will the homeless industrial complex give in and finally say, yeah, we got to start requiring treatment?
And let's put a marker on the board. Before President Trump was sworn in, Seattle and King County had the highest per capita homeless problem in America. Just full stop, period. That's what you had. That was the decisions made on how they're using federal money, state, local money, county money, special district money. That's what they've already gotten. So before Trump came in, you had the highest per capita number problem with homelessness in America. So now, I don't know how you say because of Trump that caused it. It was already there. That was your numbers already in place. You are at a rate of doubling every 4 years now. So now it's up to our side to make sure this gets implemented and work. And hopefully there'll be some people who have bought into the gimmicks of the past will say, well, that didn't work. It's time to try something different.
Jonathan, you said something about accountability that I think is important, right? Yeah. They haven't had this accountability. Like, we're giving you this money. Show us results. You can keep getting this money, as if that's some sort of controversial concept. But I think you and I both believe and have said this verbally that, you know, I'm a big believer that there's been a criminal element in all of this. I mean, you have billions of dollars that have seemingly vanished. Do you know if there's going to be any sort of looking into where did the money go? Was there any sort of criminal wrongdoing in this sort of industrial complex?
Well, for starters, our friends at the White House who have relied, again, on Discovery Institute's work as a resource have also been looking at a lot of my videos, my coverage that I show every single day here in Seattle in King County, the urban decay. And a lot of my investigations recently where I went into some of these permanent supportive housing units, you know, Plymouth Housing, DESC, and we're seeing people using fentanyl in their rooms without any accountability, no one checking in on them. In fact, there's a number that just came out recently that shows there are more overdose deaths now behind closed doors than actually on the street. So all I can say right now is that federal authorities have our videos, they're looking into it, and if drug use is happening in these federally funded buildings, I have no doubt there will be criminal investigations.
Wow. Robert, really quick, we'll leave with this. How long until we can expect this executive order to make a difference?
I think it starts right away, but as every grants process comes up, both through HHS and HUD and VA, everyone comes up, we're going to have a battle on our hands, because the other side's going to, rather than joining the team in of common sense, they're going to fight to keep their money. For some, it's going to be greed. Some, it's to keep their money. For some, it's going to be a wokey. They bought into that and they want to keep it. The good news is I think we're going to win some people over who go, you know what, that did not work for 12 years. As a quick reminder, Obama said he was going to end all homelessness, full stop, period, in 10 years. And that was at the old funding rate. Since then, funding's gone up 3 times, and homelessness is now going up 4 to 5 times, or every 4 to 5 years, it's doubling in most of America.
Wow. Yeah. Money's not the solution. We see that with this. We see it with our education system. It's better funded than ever. We're getting worse results. I think we should try giving them less money and seeing if all of a sudden it magically fixes itself and then they move on to something else that they can squeeze money out of. Jonathan, Robert, thank you guys so much for the work you've done on this. I know that behind the scenes, this is important to the White House to see what's going on, to hear a consistent message on, hey, this is failing across the country. So thank you guys for not only bringing attention to this, certainly in our state, but across the nation. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brandy.
Well, thanks for having us on.
Yeah, those two guys right there. I don't think the Trump EO happens without them. I mean, Jonathan Cho, more than any journalist in the nation, has shown a raw glimpse into the failure of Housing First and the failure of West Coast policies around homelessness. And I mean, I bet you there's been 500 million views on his videos, if not more by now. And so I just credit both of them so much and Discovery Institute for all the work they did over the last couple of years to raise awareness for the failures and the real devastation. And I mean, urban decay, but also human suffering that has been happening that I hope this executive order can help to turn around. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. Make sure you sign up for their newsletter to be alerted to opportunities to get involved in saving this state. We love. Yes, we do still love it. All right, coming up next, I got to talk about the Sydney Sweeney controversy. Is it even a controversy? No, it's not. America's done with manufactured controversies. We're not entertaining them anymore, except for our next segment. And I'm done entertaining them, okay? We're all planning for retirement. That's what we're all working toward, because that is the world that we live in. So the question is, are you properly protecting your hard-earned retirement against unnecessary risk? Get a review of your retirement portfolio, a second opinion. We get second opinions on all sorts of things. So get a second opinion from our friend Zach Abraham. He's the chief investment officer at Bulwark Capital. And Bulwark Capital specializes in managing risk. They have something called the Know Your Risk Portfolio Review, totally free second opinion. They'll talk about a little bit of, you know, take a look at your portfolio, the composition of your portfolio for 2025. They'll walk you through what's happening globally, whether it's with the tariffs or global unrest, and make sure that your portfolio is properly protected against that risk and managed against that risk. So you only get one retirement. Get a second opinion on your portfolio's efficiency. Schedule your free risk review now at knowyourriskradio.com, or rather knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. And also, while you're there, make sure that you sign up. They have webinars all the time that you can join for free. We'll alert you when the next one happens, but it's a good sort of easy way to pop on and ask Zach any questions you have. So the next time he has a webinar, we'll make sure to let you know. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay. All right. Sydney Sweeney, who I'm not big on celebrities, but she's like it's the boobs, isn't it? I think she became really famous because she went on SNL and she wore a really booby dress and she looked great. Good for her. But mm-hmm. she's also, you know, an actress. That's been in a lot of things. But she is now a new spokesmodel for American Eagle. And the internet, crazy people on the internet, are very upset about it. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. Okay. So there is this ad out. I'm not going to play any of the video ads for you, but basically Sydney Sweeney, she is a very pretty young blonde hair, blue-eyed woman, and she is a new model for American Eagle, and specifically she's modeling their denim. And this is actually a play off a very old ad where it was like a play on words between jeans, J-E-A-N-S, and jeans, G-E-N-E-S. So I can't remember who's the model, the really pretty model with like the, God, what the hell is her name? Long brown hair.
Brooke Shields?
It was Brooke Shields, I think.
Yeah.
She did a jean ad years and years ago where it was the same play on like, I have good, you know, good jeans, survive like,
yeah,
the test
and I think
of
she was
time,
14
right? She was really young and mm-hmm. it was kind of sexualized. So it was a little controversial at the time. Mm-hmm. But Sydney Sweeney is an adult, so she can do whatever she wants. This is the same thing. It's like Sydney Sweeney has great jeans. And it is meant to be a play on jeans, G-E-N-E-S. But because she's white with blonde hair and blue eyes, the wackos on the internet have said that this is like straight out of a Nazi playbook. And this is trying to push, you know, this idea of good jeans being blonde, just like Hitler, blonde hair, blue eyed people. Here's just one cuckoo person on the internet.
I will be the friend that's too woke because those Sydney Sweeney American Eagle ads are weird. Like fascist weird. Like Nazi propaganda weird. Should we be surprised that a company whose name is literally American Eagle is making fascist propaganda like this? Probably not. But it's still really shocking. Like a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white woman is talking about her good genes. Like, that is Nazi propaganda. Yeah, I don't like this one. I don't like it. I don't like anything about it, actually. Nope.
I know, that's really shocking coming from the woman with the nose ring and the trans pride flag in the background. But Sydney Sweeney does have good genes. She's very pretty. Mm-hmm. By any sort of standard anywhere in the world, she's very, very pretty. Has nothing to do with her hair or the color of her skin. Although blonde, I think blonde people are beautiful. You know what? There's also a lot of people who aren't blonde who are very, very beautiful as well and who have excellent genes. And it's just insane. So I wouldn't have covered it if it was just cuckoo people on the internet talking about it. You know, I think there's a total of like maybe 100 people in the country who are genuinely mad about this and think it's actually Nazi propaganda. The problem I have is when the news media picks it up and takes these loud, insane, unhinged voices and props them up and creates some idea that there's an actual controversy here. And I feel like America is just done with it. For instance, I didn't realize that Sydney's from Spokane, Washington. And so KHQ Local News in Spokane did this article I was seeing while I was scrolling through Facebook yesterday. It says, American Eagle launched a marketing campaign with Sydney Sweeney, and it seems to have sparked controversy. The headline, Spokane's own Sydney Sweeney in hot water over American Eagle campaign. No, she's not. In hot water with who? The person with the nose ring on the internet screaming about Hitler and the Nazis? We're done with this. And you should have seen the comments under this article, which restored my hope in humanity. Okay. People were so over it. I didn't see one comment that was like, yeah, this is so bad. It's eugenics. I didn't see one comment like that. It was all people being like, really, KHQ? She's not in hot water. There's not a controversy. She does have good genes. And there were even, I was looking at the pictures of the people commenting. There were people of all races who were like, she has great genes. She's beautiful. So I really get hope that America's done with these fake controversies. And, you know, if this was about, I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I was in like middle school, high school, where beauty standards were insane. And I talk a lot about this slingshot effect that we have in this country, where we have, for just as the beauty standards example, If you weren't rail thin, you were shamed and body shamed. You remember when Jessica Simpson gained like 10 pounds and there's that famous picture of her with like a leopard print belt and she was shamed on the front of every tabloid, even though she was totally a babe, but she put on like 10 pounds. That was the reality for women in this country for a long time, where if you weren't rail thin, Paris Hilton thin, you were fat and you like binged at night, you know, just it was horrible. So what is the response to that? Well, then you fast forward 10, 15 years and we have to pretend that obese people are pretty, that obesity is totally fine in a normal beauty standard. That's that slingshot effect. It's not healthy to say that you have to be 105 pounds soaking wet to be pretty. But it is not healthy to say that a 500-pound woman should be a Calvin Klein model or should be on the cover of Sports Illustrated. So we had that slingshot effect, and now we're going back in the other direction. Doesn't have to go too far. You know, we can be in a regular zone where, like, women with all different body types, you know, that are healthy and fit are totally fine. Because this is the same for everything. This is how the radical gender ideology thing happened. It's like, yeah, we were really shitty to gay people in this country for a long time. And so then you get that slingshot effect. Well, because we were shitty to gay people in this country for a long time, well, now you have to just act like that 500-pound man is a woman, and that's totally acceptable. It's like, no, I'm not doing that anymore. I'm not doing that anymore. Racism. We were horrible to black people in this country and people of color for a really long time. Slavery. But now it's like, okay, now we're going to shove other people down and black people can do no wrong because it's that slingshot effect. But this is fine. And I think people are just over the false manufactured outrage. The Babylon Bee put this out. Babylon Bee is hilarious. I was cracking this out. They said, American Eagle apologizes, replaces Sydney Sweeney with fat transgender double amputee of color.
You know, the thing really is that if you're pretty and you're confident, people really have a problem with that if they're not pretty. I think that's you can't have confidence. And that's the thing. In those ads, she's saying, I'm confident. I have good genes.
I have good genes. I have good genes.
I know I'm pretty. And people can't handle that.
No.
They don't like confidence if it's actually substantiated. Now, if you're fat and you have confidence, people are like, yeah, you go.
Right. It's still unhealthy, right? Like, you know, it's being unhealthy. Obese is never going to be quote unquote beautiful because you can't normalize that. Like, we got to stop normalizing those things. But, you know, what I want to see just once in society is, and I've talked about my concern that, you know, this, you know, now we're not offended by this. Like, I'm not offended by that. But that can go too far in the other direction, too, where all of a sudden nothing is offensive and we treat everyone like crap and we don't consider anyone's feelings for any reason at all. And so I want things to just settle in this middle place where the pendulum doesn't have to swing so far in each direction. And, you know, we can look at all different types of women and body types and muscular and athletic and all these things and be like, oh, that's, you know, they're beautiful and confident. And that's just fine. It's just that now I do see us maybe we're going to trend back in the other direction a little bit. But this is not offensive. This is not hearkening back to Nazi Germany. This is a very pretty young woman with a great rack who is modeling denim. And that's all it is.
You know what's so sad about it, too, is that she should have been, that article should have been like, hey, look at this local girl that just got this big campaign at like national major retailer campaign and like let's celebrate her.
She's in hot water with who?
Because some crazy people on the internet called her a Nazi.
Yeah, insane. So I hope they don't really backtrack. Wild. That's the test, right? Does American Eagle backpedal? Hopefully not.
No, this is, oh, are you kidding me? This is gold for them.
Oh yeah,
They don't want the nose ring. They don't have her anyway. She's not who they're.
She's not selling jeans
too.
She's not selling jeans. Let's be honest.
This is working for them.
Maybe that's mean, but I'm sure, ma'am, you look if that's what I can call you, you look perfectly fine in jeans. Celebrate yourself. Be confident in yourself. Be your own kind of beautiful. Mm-hmm. You know? Yay you. All right. We've got some great stories by great, I mean terrible on the national front. We're going to go down the West Coast with a couple things. First, if you're interested in housing policy in the state of Washington, make sure you sign up to attend the Engage Conference at the Meydenbauer Center in Bellevue, October 22nd and 23rd. I will be there talking about housing policy and how the media covers it poorly. But gosh, if you're concerned or involved in any aspect of housing policy, whether you're a builder, a developer, maybe a business owner who's concerned about the future of workforce housing, or if you're a landlord, Engage Conference is for you. It's totally fun. It's put on by our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington, RHAWA.org. If you are a small to mid-sized landlord, you need to make sure you become a member of RHA because they can have your back, help you navigate this really confusing, crazy situation that we're in with housing providers in the state right now between rent control and all the other new policies. So RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. Become a member of RHA today and then sign up for the Engage Conference, and I will see you there. All right, some national news. Our educational standards continue to go downward, particularly in blue states that are losing their minds over what the Trump administration is doing on education. While our test scores are in the toilet, attendance is down, enrollment is down, and we're spending more money on education than ever before. I wonder why. Because they're so focused on not hurting kids' feelings when it comes to academics and pushing radical ideologies on children that they're not focused on what you should be doing in schools. So this is from KGW Channel 8 in Portland. Middle school students in Oregon's largest school district will be graded differently. Oh, great. I already know where this is going. Let the standards just flush down the toilet. It says, under these new standards-based grading systems, students won't be graded on an A to F scale. Homework won't be graded either. Instead, grades will be based on knowledge of material. Okay, isn't that what a test and homework does, is test your knowledge of the material? I'm confused here. That might not sound like a change, it says, but teachers said it could make a big difference. For example, there's concern over how equitable, oh, there's the word, there's concern over how equitable graded homework is in practice. Some students have more help and even tutoring, while other kids may have to look after younger siblings after school. Students will be given assessments, which some teachers believe give a better representation of a student's knowledge. Here's how it works. Instead of a kid getting an 89 in English, grades will be more specific in standards-based grading. Maybe a student is highly proficient in reading but lacking in writing. That specificity gives parents and students a better understanding of where the middle schooler could improve. It says you can really see where the gaps are and where the learning is, said Malika Yeh, a Lewis and Clark education professor. It's much more equitable for all kids, really. No, it's not. It's not more equitable for the kids that are doing exactly what they need to be doing, that are absorbing the material, that are dedicating their time and energy to homework. The only kids this is equitable to are the kids that, for many, a variety of reasons, aren't getting up to the standards that they should be getting up to. And, you know, it had this whole thing that, and like, let's talk about it, okay? So homework. Send a kid home with homework. Their home environment might have a lot to do with whether they get their homework done, whether they get it done correctly. I'm not denying that. You know, I grew up in a home with kind of an absent father, and my mom was working all the time, and there was four of us and a lot of attention to go around. I get it. And then if you're a rich family and you've got a tutor or something that can help them with their homework, there's a lot of different issues that can come into play. But instead of, like, how would you deal with that from a sane, common sense perspective? Well, you would say, hey, you know, your grades aren't doing very well. You're not performing well on your homework. Let's try to get to the bottom of why. What can we do to make sure that you're absorbing the information? If the home environment is not a place where you're able to get your homework done, how could we assist you in making sure that you're living up and meeting these academic standards? But instead of doing that, they're like, let's just lower standards for everyone. Let's just lower standards for everyone. And what that's going to do is graduate, sorry, dumber and dumber and dumber generations of kids who, and then China's just going to come and take over the United States. So this is another one of those things that is done in the name of equity. They have it in the article multiple times. And all it's going to do is we're going to continue to see test scores go down, because then you still have the standardized tests. So they're not going to be they're not going to be graded on their homework. But their tests, like, are what's going to happen with the tests then? So you're setting them up to fail for exams, and you're certainly setting them up to fail for college. And then in the workforce, again, there's going to be expectations of them in a workforce where it's either you meet these expectations or you lose your job. But you've set them up to believe that, oh, expectations are fungible. Not in a workforce, they're not. Absolutely crazy. One more story I want to get to. We were beside ourselves, and this is another story we need to do a follow-up on. Remember the story of the Kirkland teacher who was arrested by ICE? Turns out it's some dude who came into the U.S. from Brazil in 2018 on a tourist visa, just stayed here and got a job teaching theater at a local high school. And he was wanted for theft back in Brazil, so ICE picked him up, and it was this whole sort of sob story. And I'm like, how can a guy from another country who just came here on a tourist visa get a job in a local school where teachers and staff have to pass these rigorous background checks? Did you do a background check for him in Brazil? So that's crazy. I thought that was bad enough. Now imagine that same scenario happening, but instead of getting a job at a school, you get hired as a police officer. That happened in Maine. This is, I don't even know how this happens. Bill Malusion at Fox News says, ICE confirms to Fox News they've arrested a Jamaican illegal alien who is employed as a police officer in Maine after he illegally attempted to buy a gun, which triggered an alert to the ATF. ICE says John Luke Evans, who is in the U.S. illegally as a visa overstay, was hired as a cop by Old Orchard Beach PD in Maine and admitted to trying to purchase the gun as part of his job. ICE says he first entered the U.S. lawfully by flying into Miami in 2023, but never left on his scheduled departure flight and has overstayed his visa ever since. Hold on. This dude comes in on a plane into Miami just 2 years ago, not even 2 years ago, is here illegally. And in the course of less than 2 years, he manages to get a job as a police officer? How does that even happen? U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement released this statement. John Luke Evans not only broke U.S. immigration law, but he also illegally attempted to purchase a gun. Shockingly, Evans was employed as a local law enforcement officer. The fact that a police department would hire an illegal alien and unlawfully issue him a firearm while on duty would be comical if it weren't so tragic. We have a police department that was knowingly breaking the very law they are charged with enforcing in order to employ an illegal alien. ICE Boston will continue to prioritize public safety by arresting and removing criminal alien threats from our New England community. So there's an important part of this. There's some pictures. There's a Substack called The Robinson Report, and he's like a independent journalist over there in the Maine area. And he has these pictures because, remember, when this guy tried to actually buy a gun on his own, that's how he got caught. He was flagged by the ATF, and that's how they found him. But this guy has a picture. He has a firearm. In this picture, and then there's a picture of him getting his badge pinning. Imagine this guy. Look at the look on his face. He's like, here I am, illegally in the United States. I've been here less than 2 years, and I'm a cop. So who gave him that gun? Who gave him that gun when he could have never passed the necessary process to be able to get it? So what ICE is saying is the city did it knowingly. Somebody's got to go to jail for that. That has to be criminal. Somebody has to go to jail for that. Because you took a roundabout toward our laws and gave someone a gun who shouldn't have a gun?
Or just didn't do the work. Like, just, oh, yeah.
I mean, look,
the check.
It's a small town. I look at that picture there of the police officers. They all look about 12 years old.
They do.
So maybe they were desperate to get more police officers on the job.
I mean, he looks so happy.
Oh, I'm sure they're oh, my God, we're in Maine and we got a black guy who wants to be a cop. We can say we can claim diversity. So they're like, let's just bypass all of the regular standards because we got to make this happen ASAP because all the other cops in that photo are white. But it's like, let's just give him a gun.
There's the American dream right there.
I'm not even mad at the guy. I got to be honest.
That's the thing.
I'm not even mad at you, bro.
He came here on vacation. He's like, you know what? I like this place. I think I'm just going to stay and become a cop and contribute to society. I mean, if he had done it legally, he'd be an upstanding citizen.
Right. That would be a great story. Come to the U.S. from another country, a legal citizen, and you say, I want to serve my community and protect people. Would love it. I'm not even mad at the guy. I'm mad at the system. I wonder how the media is going to spin this one. What a crazy story. All right, we got a killer subscriber poll coming up next. I haven't looked at the results. I'm so curious to know whether you guys believe Paco is a real person. First, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. If you're thinking about selling your home, Wes is an awesome guy. His communication is, I think, what's really key. And I hear this a lot from people who've used Wes. Wes Jones and Associates is he's always there when we need him. when we have questions, when we're panicking, when we're stressed, whatever it is, Wes Jones picks up the phone. And I think that's step one. But he and his team, I mean, first of all, Wes has been doing this for a long time in our area. He's been through all the market ups and downs. And one of the first things he's going to do is give you a free market analysis just to sort of enter the process, setting your expectations. Hey, here's what the market's been like. Here's how much you can expect to get from your home. Here's how long it might take. And just being transparent and holding your hand figuratively, unless you literally want him to hold your hand. I'm sure he's a nice guy. I'm sure he'll hold it for you. No, Nicole?
Maybe.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't volunteer Wes to hold people's hands, but he's just a nice guy. Help you through the process every step of the way. And him and his team, their listings that they put together, you guys got to take a look at these. Go to sellwithwes.com. Check out some of the listings they put together. Their photos and video and everything is just so beautiful. It really shows you how they make homes stand out amongst a market of other listings so you can get more feet in the door, more offers on the table, and get the most possible value out of your home. And that's what really matters at the end of the day. Sellwithwes.com. A better way to sell your home. And I'm going to charge extra for the jingle. Okay, our daily subscriber show poll. I have to ask you guys this. Am I crazy? Well, yes, but I asked subscribers on Patreon, Locals, and X, do you believe Paco is a real person who was really arrested by ICE? Do you believe Paco is a real person who was really... I'm looking at the results. There's no way that's the result. Who was really arrested by ICE. Nicole?
Gosh, I struggle with
this. Oh my God,
this.
I have never. This can't be. There has to be a glitch in my poll. Hold on. Oh my God, this is a first. This is a first. Go ahead, Nicole.
I do not believe the story of Paco is true. I think there's something in there. There's a seed that she grew this from. But I don't believe the story is true.
Did you say there's a seed she grew this from?
Yes.
And she's a farmer?
She's a farmer.
That was really creative. Yeah, Nicole. Yeah. Good.
But
I've never seen this.
Is it 100%?
100%. On every platform. We do the poll on three platforms. Patreon, Locals, and X. Hundreds of people have taken this poll so far in the last 45 minutes.
That is crazy.
I have never seen it be 100% no. 100%.
And
you guys,
both of us said yes. Both of us say there's something's true.
So my answer to this crazy poll would be yes. But only because, and maybe you guys are like, Brandy, you really haven't learned much. You're such a dud. Maybe I'm just Pollyannish.
I think we both are.
But I've been in the media for a long time. And I've covered a lot of lies and a lot of mistruths and stretching of the truth. I mean, I cover politicians for a living. I think that this is too dumb of a lie to be manufactured from nothing. It's too dumb of a story to manufacture from nothing. And the reason I say that is because she owns that farm and she has neighbors and she's very publicly out there with her real name and her business and her social media,
right,
saying that their neighbor Paco was arrested. So if I'm, she has to be at least intelligent enough to know that would be a really weird thing to make up, because her other neighbors would be like, who the hell are you talking about? Now, do I think his name is really Paco? No. Do I think that's a nickname and she's telling her neighbors, oh, it's so-and-so, but we don't want to put his information out there? Do I think she's making up and exaggerating the circumstances? Do I think she's doesn't know the full truth of why ICE? 100%.
He's already in custody, so this protecting him thing doesn't make any sense because he's already in custody unless he did something so terrible, like, you know,
right,
he has this terrible crime against him and that's right, the reason this happened in the first place.
And yeah, and if that weren't the case, then she would happily, right, provide more information,
right,
because it would be this tragic story. So I agree that we don't have the whole picture. And that the media never should have printed this story. It's insane that it's still up at the Olympian and they haven't issued some sort of apology or retraction.
Or responded
to you. Or a response or anything, because it's just that bad. But there has to be in there somewhere a human being who was actually picked up by ICE. I believe that. I still believe that, even if 100% of you say, no, I've never seen this, you guys. I was not expecting this. Officer Lee Groinman says, total scam. Dig a little deeper and I'll bet you the writer and the nose ring are connected. Street, never believe a far lefty with a huge nose ring. She truly believes in herself, though. Big Swan says, get that GoFundMe taken down. Sue, I check the nose ring lady. I bet she has some AI skills. Mike says, maybe I might be inclined to give her the benefit of the doubt if it wasn't for the fact that virtually every other story about some poor soul being abducted by ICE didn't turn out to be someone, did turn out to be someone wanted for drugs or human trafficking or murder or some other crime. Only one can only take so much gaslighting before one just outright refuses to believe anything coming out of the mouths of the gaslighters anymore. Let me see. Catherine, love your common sense factual reporting. Appreciate you exposing the lies. Grateful for your efforts to minimize the expletives. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm trying. Robert says this should be felony fraud. David says grifters. I keep hearing there's some famous person named Paco something. I can't think of the last name. This is the best comment on any poll I've ever gotten. Emroff said, I knew Paco when he went by the name Corn Pop. He was a bad dude. Oh, my God. You guys are cracking me up.
Someone said he was a bad hombre.
I knew Paco when he went by the name Corn Pop. He was a bad hombre. While we were chatting and laughing about other stories, Nicole did get a response just a few minutes ago from GoFundMe. They said, thanks for reaching out. I want to confirm receipt of your request, and I want to let you know that we are looking into it, Jeff, at GoFundMe.
Right.
So at this very moment, GoFundMe is aware, not necessarily that it's a fraud or a scam, but that we have made an honest effort to get information to confirm it and have so far been unable to do so. So my hope is that GoFundMe, if they're looking into it, would obviously give the person behind this account an opportunity to confirm its authenticity. So if GoFundMe comes back to us and says, hey, we were able to talk to this woman and she gave us the information we needed to confirm this, then, you know, we'll come back and we'll update all of you on that. 100% of you think that there is no one named Paco.
That is wild. We've never had that. We've had some pretty...
We've had like 99%.
Easy... Yeah, easy polls, and they've not been 100%. Yeah,
I knew That's Paco crazy. When he was going by the name Corn Pop. He was a bad dude. You guys are funny. Funny. Okay, we'll get to some other comments. Cynthia says, new scavenger hunt. Where's Paco? We need to file a missing persons report on Paco stat. Yeah, I mean, gosh, you know, he's a ghost at this point. Bill Biz, Carissa doesn't look at all like an Antifa member, right? And I'm going to feel bad if Carissa is just was totally spot on.
I'm not going to feel bad because she hasn't responded to us. She could have prevented this escalation had she responded.
She also didn't respond to the Olympian. They said they'd reached out, and this is a couple weeks ago, to the GoFundMe. And obviously, they didn't update the story at all. So
that's correct.
That's so also weird.
She's brought this upon herself.
And if I were trying to raise money for someone, I would want to be like, yeah, absolutely. This is the guy. And it's weird that there was a real picture and they replaced it with an AI generated sketch of the image. Did they think that a sketch would be less susceptible to reverse image search? What was it? That's a real man in that picture. Who is it? Is that's it Paco?
Maybe it's not Paco and she didn't want to get in trouble for using somebody else's photo.
I don't know. We're going to figure it out. I've done everything. You name something else I could do to try to verify this that I haven't already done.
I don't know.
I mean, we're cross-referencing things. We're in there. It's crazy. But that's what you're supposed to do, Olympian. Two Ladies says, I know this is off topic, but concerning the electric ferries, there is something I came across in another location which found out they didn't have the infrastructure to recharge them. Is this a future problem there too? I don't know. We are overdue to do a story on the ferry debacle. So this can be one of the things that we ask about for sure. Also said, on gas and climate, Cynthia says, climate change has nothing to do with driving an electric car. It's cutting down trees that breathe carbon. We need to clean up our oceans and rivers. Yeah, that's uncontroversial. Let's clean the trash out of our oceans and rivers.
Great idea.
Let's start there. Let's pick up the trash on the side of the road. And you know what? We can all do that for free. We don't need them to take our money and then do it at 100x the cost of what it would take to get people to go out there and just volunteer. Rick, $5.09 for gas in Freeland yesterday on South Whidbey. It's a big who cares from bumbling Bob, lib-crazed state legislature, and far left-wing Dems still pushing the new Green New Deal scam. Only thing that matters to them is resisting Donald Trump. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
On homelessness, Beth Dutton's steady says treatment is not the mission, but keeping the money flowing into the failing system was the priority, as needles, tinfoil, and Narcan deployments are completely normalized. Yeah, we did a story on the show the other day that there was like a sign outside a public library saying, you know, reading day and free Narcan. It's like, what? At the library for a kids event? What are you talking about?
It's nuts.
Papa Woody living in? Sounds like the needle exchange program. What sounds like the needle exchange program? On the main cop who was illegal from Jamaica, Dan Blatt said, we need to secure our elections. Enough of this Democratic machine stealing the leadership powers for Washington citizens. Had enough of this destructive leadership in Washington state. I don't know how that has anything to do at all with the main cop.
Well, I think there's just none of this checking is happening. So whether you're background checking a cop or you're checking voters.
Yeah. Saying, yeah, I don't like the excuse that, like, we're losing elections here because stolen elections. I haven't seen enough evidence to support that. And I also think it gives Republicans a really convenient way to excuse their failures at the ballot box.
I don't what believe you're saying, there's but enough I just fraud. Think there needs to be checks on all of these things.
100%.
Like, we just need to make sure. So like voter ID. Okay, right. It's not a big deal. Right. Let's make sure you have some voter ID.
100%. I agree with that.
Done.
There's no reason not to make sure at every available opportunity we're securing our elections. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a convenient way for Republicans to explain away running horrible candidates, you know, that don't go out and do what needs to be done, can't fundraise and all these things, then losing by 18 percentage points. You know, I just don't buy it.
I also just think that there's too many arguments that are against, like, why are you fighting voter ID? Like, that's ridiculous.
It's because they know that there are some people who are unlawful.
It's working for them.
And I'm not saying it can't change the outcome of elections. I mean, the public lands commissioner's race, we've had races that are within 10, 30 votes. I mean, look at the infamous 2004 gubernatorial campaign. So absolutely, a handful of fraudulent ballots can change the outcome of an election. I don't want to act like that's not possible and has never happened, but I don't believe that's why Washington is a blue state.
Or how we're talking about this, or we played that cut a couple weeks ago about the redistricting and the reason they need illegals here because of the redistricting, or the reason they're calling a bunch of these people that are being picked up by ICE, they're calling them constituents. Well, they're not constituents if they're not voting, and they shouldn't be voting if they're not legal. So it's very... I don't know. I'm with them in making sure that legal people are voting, making sure that 100%. There's a system of legal votes.
Independent Many United says, Brandy, then you haven't looked into the vote counting machines enough. You should. I was also hearing from a lot of people that gas is even expensive at Costco. Somebody said they got gas for $4.19 at Costco. That's a lot for
that
a Costco.
That is a lot.
Yeah, I wonder what Costco that was.
Probably in Seattle.
Yeah, it's just depressing. The gas prices are depressing, and they'll always be. There's no amount of money I could ever make on this planet that wouldn't still be pissed off if I drove up to a gas pump and it said $5.
Oh.
You know what I was also thinking about the other day? Maybe this should be a show poll. Let's say you were a billionaire. Is there a store you would still never stop shopping at?
The Arlington Hardware store.
Arlington Hardware, why don't you sponsor this show?
I know, why don't you sponsor us? It's my favorite.
I was thinking about this yesterday because I go to Home Goods all the time.
Yes.
Like, if you haven't seen me at a Home Goods, then you've never been into Home Goods, because I'm there all the time. And I get stopped at Home Goods all the time, and I'm just like, I'm obsessed with this place. I could be a billionaire. I would be at Home Goods once a week.
Yeah, you probably would.
Oh my gosh, 100%.
I would go Arlington and probably a Costco. I love Costco.
Oh, 100%. Why would you not go to Costco? You're buying things in bulk. Yeah. It just makes sense.
Just makes sense. Papa Woody said that is the needle exchange thing. He said every government program you've talked about.
He was comparing it to every government program, the needle exchange program. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, anyway, we're going way over time. That was fun. I'm curious what store you'd go to if you were a billionaire.
I like that question.
I know, right? Home Goods, Cost Plus World Market.
It's a good one.
Oh my God, I love that place. I love that place. If you ever want to find me somewhere, you go into your neighborhood Home Goods, there's a roughly 30% chance I'll be in there.
Crate and Barrel. If I had all the money, I would shop there.
Crate and Barrel? That's expensive.
That's what I mean. If I had all the money, I would shop there. I don't shop there because I don't have all the money. But if I had
it's expensive
all the money,
for not that high quality of furniture.
I think it's decent.
No, I think it's overpriced.
I like the plain.
Overpriced. Okay, with that, let's get to our closing. So overpriced. Horrible. Let's get to our closing sanity check. They just don't make furniture like they used to.
I wouldn't care.
They just don't make furniture like they used to. They don't make mayors like they used to either. In LA, Mayor Karen Bass was asked in an interview, we only have the audio of it, about Biden's 4 years of open borders and the very obvious, I mean, it's hard to say, it's hard to deny, the very obvious consequences that had for American cities.
Now, during the Biden administration, early on, immigration was, in fact, surging in this country and at a chaotic level. A number of Democratic officials at state and local levels complained to the White House. Did the influx of migrants, generally from Central America, cause problems in Los Angeles, and what were they?
Well, let me just tell you that during those years I was in Congress, I can absolutely emphatically say no, they did not cause problems in the city of Los Angeles.
Not a problem in the world to be found. Weird, weird how that works. That has been your closing sanity check for today. That has been today's extra, extra overtime edition of Undivided. When we're having fun, we're having fun, you know? Paco, where are you?
I didn't realize what time it was.
Let me sing it. I'm going to make up a song on the spot about Paco. Paco. Where have you gone, Paco? I am sitting here with a taco, and I'd love to share it with my friend Paco. But he's gone. He's gone. He's disappeared somewhere, nowhere to be found. Paco, I've looked up and down. Where are you? That was pretty good.
That was jump the shark moment.
I'm sorry, for a made-up song, I have to say, that was quality stuff. You're welcome.